You're listening to the Brave Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for all parents who deeply love their children and want their health span to equal their lifespan. In other words, to be healthy their entire lives. If that's you, tune in. In every episode, we're grappling with contemporary issues that affect every child every day in areas that your doctors either don't know or don't have time to tell you. It's your time to be brave. Hello, everyone, on our Brave Parent podcast. Today, we're going to talk about a great big subject, drink. The chapter title is Drink, Bubble, Fizz, Guzzle, Gulp. What is this stuff anyway? I started off the chapter talking about sitting on my porch drinking a hot cup of chai tea with organic spices and a little dash of cow's milk and wondering, are these spices all organic? And was this cow really grass-fed and antibiotic-free that gave the milk? And, you know, I wrote in here all these, and what about the caffeine? Is it better to have the decaffeinated version? What would they have to do to process it to get the caffeine out of the tea leaves? And all these questions that I ordinarily don't ponder because, well, I love it. It's a treat for me. And there's something about that taste and the aroma and the warmth. And that, my friends, is the criteria most of us use to choose what we like to drink. Do we Amen. Love it? The trouble is many of our drinking habits are killing us. And we don't even know it. So today I want to help you figure out whether or not your own drinking habits and your children's drinking habits are healthful or hurtful.
You know, and
what can we drink?
Susan, I love this because the last episode we talked about eating and food. And I feel like that's the first thing people question, right? Like you don't really question drinks unless it's alcohol. But outside of that, you don't really question a lot when it comes to drinking. So
yeah, a little more than 50% of our 25 to 50, 40 teaspoons of sugar a day come from what we drink, which has created this huge problem with metabolic dysfunction. You know, diabetes and overweightedness, so, you know, high cholesterol, heart disease, all of that from what we drink. And we condition our kids to do that starting from when they're little. Mm-hmm. Even pediatricians tout fruit juice, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. Yeah, 100%. I mean, that was something that we just automatically did with raising our kids, apple juice for lunch. Orange juice for breakfast. Thought it was just part of what we do, right? Like it never really thought of it as a treat, never really thought of it as anything bad until I read this book. And then suddenly I realized the bad habits that we had fallen into. But pediatrician-wise.
Well, interestingly, remember that the fruit is wonderful because it has the antidote to go with the sugar and it's called fiber. When fruit. We squeeze the juice, right. When we squeeze the juice out of the fruit and throw the fiber away and all the micronutrients, by the way, that the plant holds that are so good, we literally take in sugar water and, you know, a few little nutrients. But one of the reasons that juice, I guess, got to be popular is because kids who had constipation, and think about why constipation, mm-hmm. because we have oftentimes gut dysregulation. So when we're not pooping well, the pediatricians say, give them juice.
Yep.
And these fruit juices help, you know, help unbind them. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is the kids start to get in the mindset or the habit of whenever I'm thirsty, I get something cold and sweet. That's a perfect setup. The food manufacturers and drink manufacturers love that.
Yeah.
Because guess what it you know, when I look at unhealthy adults that are drinking, I had a young man this week in my practice, 39 years old, who was suffering from non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, just lost 30 pounds because he can't eat. He is super, super unhealthy. I could go into his whole health history. He was drinking 2 gallons of Mountain Dew a day.
No.
Not eating.
Wow.
And how does that start? You show me a sick adult. Now that's an extreme. He's down to 20 ounces a day. And my job was sort of to say like, why should we be consuming anything that looks like antifreeze to begin with? But that's another story altogether. But the point is that you show me a sick adult and I'll show you a child on his way. Mm-hmm. And so as parents, we need to not only change what we're doing, setting examples of bad drinking examples, but also to be able to set them out on the right path so their preferences form around things that are healthful, not hurtful.
Yeah. That's so that's
part of what do we drink besides water?
Yeah. I think it's so important to dive into it because again, thinking about the fruit juice aspect, even we'll go into milk, I'm sure here in a bit, that's a whole different area in itself, but even with the fruit juices, it's funny because I remember a difference between like me and my spouse at the time, right? With how we would shop, and he would get just like regular old orange juice or whatever. And I would be like, no, you need 100% natural, because I didn't know, right? Like, I didn't know that that really doesn't make much of a difference, but I'm like, right, that's the better option. Go with 100% natural.
I ask that all the time. If it's 100% fruit juice, is that okay? I want to say, well, have we looked at why your kid has cavities? Right?
Yeah. Because
cavities, tooth decay is sort of the canary in the coal mine. We'll talk a lot more about that in chapter 7 on oral health. But when you think about the fact that these teeth are completely intact little structures, crystalline structures, and should never leach calcium out to buffer the acid. Not only is what we're drinking acidic, which helps dissolve teeth, but the sugar feeds the certain bacteria in the mouth that produces acid. We tell the kids that that the bacteria bugs eat the sugar and pee on their teeth. And literally to buffer the acid, we let go of calcium out of our teeth, but we do it out of our bones too. And then we pee it out through our kidneys. So we get kids with broken bones and osteoporosis early. I mean, it's crazy. And kidney stones, a lot of young adults have kidney stones from years and years of soda. So
that's terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, it's a real problem.
Susan, I would say like the one thing with like juices specifically that I feel like is really hard to break away from, it's you know, for some reason it's in my head. I mean, we kind of grew up without a whole lot of money and all of that, right? So I would always watch TV shows or any sort of situation where I'm like, oh, that looks fancy. And I feel like all of the fancy breakfasts or anything like that, like the orange juice, right? It always looks so perfect and it looks just ideal. It's so hard, even knowing everything I know, thanks to you, it's hard still to break that image of like eating breakfast, even if it's a healthy breakfast, and not having orange juice.
I hate to say that back when I was a kid, but we did drink orange juice. And we drank it out of 6-ounce orange juice cups.
Oh, interesting.
I still have all of my grandma's juice glasses, but they were 6 ounces. And we didn't drink orange juice every day, but we drank it out of little juice glasses. And what we didn't have, we didn't have any sugared cereals. In fact, I remember the first time, this makes me old, it's because I am, but the first time that we put sugar on cereal was Tony the Tiger Frosted Flakes. Literally see the sugar, so it wasn't all impregnated in, it was on top of the flakes. Yeah. But we didn't have breakfast cereals in those days. They didn't put sugar in the hamburger, in the ketchup, in the curly fries, in the bun, in the, you know, so we're getting so much sugar that we now say no fruit juice, we say whole fruits. Part of the reason why is because back when I was in dental school, they told us tooth decay would be a disease of the past in 10 years. Do you know where it is now? 84% of school age kids have had tooth decay.
Wow. 20%
of 2-year-olds, 1/3 of 3-year-olds. So now we want kids seen under the age of 1 for the first dental visit because it's truly a preventable disease, but we need to educate parents about this, you know, not to, you know, be drinking milk, chocolate milk, you know, all of the stuff at bedtime, you know, all of the sugar that we're getting. So anyway, we can go on about teeth later.
Real but fast though, because I think that's related to drink. One of the things I think about, again, as a parent, you've talked about cutting off a specific type of drink, right? Especially before bedtime. And you just briefly mentioned that, if you want to say that again.
Yeah. So, you know, you definitely do not want anything sweet within an hour of bedtime, because our saliva really slows down during nighttime. And so whatever pH is in your mouth, whatever acidity is in your mouth, is going to stay there all night. But we also, you know, when you hear kids getting like, but moms ask all the time, can breast milk cause tooth decay? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially if they have teeth and they're feeding through the night, then that residual milk, which has the lactose or the sugar in it, can feed the bacteria bugs. And we're going to talk about transmissibility of those bacteria bugs later, but certainly that can be an issue, as well as sugar driving insulin resistance by what you're drinking. It literally goes into your bloodstream like an IV. Mm. And so the whole area of getting sugar out of your diet by drinks is just 100%. Everything from sports drinks to like vitamin waters. And then there's the whole, and soda pop, and certainly energy drinks. So we have also to talk about caffeine. And we also want to talk about non-nutritive sweeteners. What happens, because I remember for the first half of my career, I would say to people, you have all this tooth decay, just switch to diet soda. Before we really understood that the non-nutritive sweeteners are considered metabolically inactive, calorie-free, because they're so powerfully sweet that you need very little of it to make a sweet taste. But they do register in your brain as a stimulus for metabolic dysregulation. So almost all of them are associated with weight gain and insulin resistance, which is that march toward prediabetes and diabetes. And so it isn't okay to just substitute them, even though you may be experiencing a decrease in tooth decay. They're also acidic. They have all those, added colors and flavor enhancers and all of the chemicals that your body needs to process. So it's good to get rid of the fructose, which is only processed through your liver, which causes that non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. But the non-nutritive sweeteners are not really considered a healthy or even healthier option.
So. And I think that's important to really point out, because I know, and again, and you know, the last episode, we talked a lot about eating and diets and all of that. And I know with several different diets I did throughout my life, not knowing any better now that I do, it was always that diet sodas were allowed. Always, because of the zero calories and everything else. And the thing is, if you're actually going in from a perspective of like, I'm trying to be healthy so I can live longer, that's counteracting that then. And I think that's really important to know.
Well, and I think it teaches your brain again, that to quench my thirst, I need something cold and sweet. And I think that's a dangerous game. I also think that when your brain gets used to something so sweet that you really can't taste the flavors of the foods that are good for us. I mean, an apple doesn't taste as sweet as those drinks, right? So how do kids enjoy an apple when they can grab a diet soda?
Yeah.
Right. So the idea that we can literally numb the brain to the experience of tasting real food, right? By constantly droning it with these very, very sweet alternatives.
It's terrifying, scary to think of that. And, you know, one thing that, you know, we had talked about the pediatrician and then fruit drinks, but I feel like one of my biggest confusions, even to this day, my youngest child is 4 and he loves milk, like loves milk. And I remember from my first child, the pediatrician was always like, if they want to drink milk, it's good for them. It's good for them. So that's still in my head because it was like my first child. I'm learning, I'm soaking up all the information I can. But let's talk about milk and milk requirements, especially for children.
Well, pediatricians will always ask, how's the milk going? Like it's our only source of calcium and vitamin D, right?
Yep.
There's so many other great sources of calcium and vitamin D, but we fortified it because cow's milk was kind of a big deal. We now have a lot of cows milk that is really produced from cows that aren't very healthy, and we're drinking all that. But also switching from human breast milk to cow's milk is not a natural substitute, right? It isn't.
Yeah.
And many, many kids are dairy sensitive. Mm-hmm. And so for a while, the American Academy of Allergy, Immunology, and Asthma, they started saying, like, we don't want to introduce cow's milk right away. Now they're saying you can do it, but you have to do it in moderation. I think that what we find is that kids develop sensitivities around things they eat and drink a lot of. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're pushing milk because it's high calorie, good fat, good micronutrients, all of that, like, it's not something I think we should make the biggest staple in our diet, especially if you want to go on and enjoy a lifetime of being able to eat, you know, some butter in your baked goods around a piece of bread, or if you want to be able to eat a bite of cottage cheese or a chunk of, you know, a whole real cheese someday. You know, like, you don't want to create a completely dairy sensitive kid. And again, we have not solved the mystery on why our allergies are so sky high, but we will talk about that in the very next section on digest. We'll talk about those theories. So you don't want to miss that, especially if your kids are dealing with any allergies or food sensitivities. Mm-hmm. But dairy is a tricky one. So a lot of people have come up with a lot of different alternatives to cow's milk, like nut milks, oat milks.
Yep.
Now, my son Hunter is really big because he's an environmentalist guy too. And he really is not big on almonds because it takes so much water to produce an almond, right? Mm. That it's literally depleting our, you know, our earth's water to grow an almond population to the size of being able to support the change from cow's milk to almond milk. There's oat milk and other milks. And you can, by the way, make your own almond milk or oat milk, because in the packages of these milks are all of the thickeners and emulsifiers and flavor enhancers that we're trying to steer clear of in manufactured foods. Yeah. Whereas if you got a blender, you soaked your almonds in distilled water and you, or filtered water, and you blended it, and you sieved it through bags you can get right off the internet and made your own almond milk, it doesn't taste the same. It tastes better, actually, but it doesn't taste the same as the commercial thickened up versions. And especially if you're getting flavored almond milks with sugar in it, that, of course, is not a healthy choice.
And that is tricky because they kind of hide that they're flavored a lot of times. I didn't realize the first time I switched to nut milks, this was years ago, thinking that they were healthier, I was getting a vanilla flavored one. I didn't recognize that because I had no clue what I was looking for at the time. And so that's what I had adjusted to. And then I had to readjust, you know, past that point. So
amazing how many people are using like nut milk coffee creamers, not recognizing that they still have high fructose corn syrup and, you know, all the stuff in it that we didn't like to begin with, right?
Like I said, this is the danger, because you go thinking you're making better choices because you hear something briefly, but if you're not fully educated on it, I mean, I think, you know, when we first started this book too, it was something I had talked about. I had some sort of nut creamer, right, in the fridge that I was using in my coffee. And you were like, go and check that out. And I looked and it was like loaded with bad stuff, but I thought I was making a healthy
half. By the way, you know, the biggest thing we talked a little bit in our last podcast about the non-fat craze and what happened there is, like, we had things like non-fat half and half, like by virtue of its name, it's half cream and half milk. How do we get such a chemical shitstorm that it tastes like half and half, but there's no fat in it? Right?
Seriously. It's crazy.
So I said, go back to the whole cream, or you know, put a dash of cow's milk in there, right? If you can, if you're not sensitive to it. So I'm not touting any of that. I really think our best bet is water. And unfortunately, water gets to be boring for people. And even water is so confusing. Do we do bottled water or tap water?
And let's talk about that.
Filtered water. Because if you're filtering your water, then you're not getting fluoride. And do you need fluoride? And so we can talk about all that.
Let's go ahead, because water, I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, you're supposed to drink a certain amount of water every day, right? And like you said, there are people who don't like water, so then they aid their water. I know I have talked to you before about almost being worried that my kids, at one point, they don't so much anymore, but last year they were drinking tons of water. I mean, they're going back and constantly refilling. So it almost felt like the extreme. And I'm like, why do I have to question water so much? But there are tons of questions.
There are a lot of questions. I love that you use the word refilling, because when you're using a Yeti or something, you know, a refillable, you're not only being more responsible to the environment. I don't know how we bought hook, line, and sinker this whole idea of bottled water, where every time the single-use plastic problem is just a very recent phenomenon. But if you look at it carefully, it is ridiculous how much water, how much plastic we're producing. And it's an abomination how much we're dumping into landfills and oceans and rivers and et cetera. So I'm not a big single-use plastic person. I also don't think that the FDA regulates the bottled water, the EPA, Food and Drug Administration, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, regulates our tap water, two very different entities. And for a long time, it was pretty understood that the EPA was more stringent on water than even the FDA that's regulating what goes on the shelves. Hmm. Because what happens when we put water on the shelves to keep bacteria counts low, they add what? Acid. Mm. Yeah, they add acid. And that came from like a food outbreak of a botulism or something in 1970, early 70s, that the FDA required every wet product in, you know, in cans and bottles and jars to have like acid added. And we're talking about like citric acid, or, you know, it's like to keep the bacterial counts low. So bottled waters have been sitting on shelves for a long time. Obviously, it's still water, so you can't have bacteria in there, so they have to treat it somehow. Distilled water is probably safer, but you're distilling it and getting all the minerals out of the water, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to know. I'm for most of our country, the tap water is very safe. And I know the Flint River crisis created a huge uproar, because that was a really big debacle, and it's in my state, and I talk about it in Brave Parent. It was a political nightmare and a very sad thing, and it really single-handedly increased bottled water consumption throughout the world because of that scare of lead in the water. But for most of us, our tap water is safe, and if you don't trust your tap water, fair game. You can filter it with a Brita filter, the refrigerator filter. You can get a filtration system, a reverse osmosis in your home. But you need to also know that you're taking fluoride out of the water. And do we, you and I, Lauren, need fluoride? We really don't in our water. But who does need it is if you want your kids' teeth stronger than they would be naturally. And I don't believe that fluoride, if we needed fluoride, our bodies would be producing it. We're amazingly designed. The problem is that we are consuming so much sugar that we, of course, took out of the natural plant, put it into all of our food supply, that the cavity rate is unbelievable. So this high cavity rate, one of the ways to keep the cavity rate lower in your kids is to build teeth that, as they're growing, absorb the systemic fluoride and make stronger teeth for a lifetime. Then there's topical fluoride. So we're going to talk about the difference between systemic and topical later. But you and I don't need fluoride in our water. Our kids need it.
See, and that's an important point. Yeah,
it is. So if you're filtering your water, your kids are drinking only bottled water, they're literally growing up with increased risk of tooth decay for the ever-loving rest of their life. Mm-hmm. And we can certainly add fluoride supplementation or prescription, or for parents who really are opposed to fluoride for other reasons, you can certainly filter water, but you need to know that it's, you know, that your kids' teeth really do benefit from having fluoride in the structure.
That's a great tip, and it's so good to know. Yeah. And it's just crazy. It's one of those things, like, why did water get so confusing?
It sure has, hasn't it? And I often think about the thin plastic that we can crinkle. And now we know that we're releasing more chemicals by crinkling it. And certainly if it sits in the sun, you're leaching more chemicals into that. So again, I'm more into like Nalgenes that are, you know, that are chemical free or that are proven safe, or something like a metal container, and, you know, let kids and get cool stickers and own their water bottle and think that's a cool thing. And I also really like my bubbly waters. Now, a lot of the bubbly waters with flavoring are all very acidic, even if they don't have sugar. And the acid level is a real problem for our bodies, our bones and our teeth. That level of increased acidity, when we're supposed to be neutral bodies, our pH is supposed to be very neutral, creates a lot of problems for us on a health crisis level. Mm-hmm. So I like the fact that tap water is neutral. And if you want to get, I love the SodaStream. Do you know what a SodaStream
yes.
is?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sitting right here. I could get it from the kitchen, but it's basically a bottle. I use tap water and I just put it in there and fizz it up and pour it. And it's fancy. It's sparkly. It's fun.
It doesn't have to be soda. Let's point that out. It doesn't have to be soda, despite SodaStream.
SodaStream.
Yes.
The SodaStream just sparkles up your water, yes. But it's also, you can add a lemon or a lime. I would warn you not to be drinking lemon and lime in your water all day long. Definitely not. But if you wanted to enhance it at dinner time as something fun and frolicly for your dinner, that's great. Lemon water isn't bad for your body. It is acidic, but it actually alkalizes the gut, or tones the acids down in the stomach. Which is great, but it's very acidic for your teeth. So you don't want to be sipping on lemon water throughout the day, or you'll cause enamel erosion.
Is it one of those things? Because I feel like a lot of people, again, talk about, like, they just don't like the taste of water. So the lemon helps, right? Do you feel like it's something that, again, the rewiring you can do and get used to it?
Absolutely.
There's no excuse.
People who drink a lot of water love water. Yeah. I'm drinking warm water. I happen to like tea water and sometimes drink green tea, green organic tea, but that is a little bit of caffeine. I don't really need the caffeine drug. We can talk about caffeine, but I often will just be sipping on warm water, like tea water. And this keeps it nice and hot. And I kind of like it, even though it's a warm day out, right?
I feel like it's that extra though, like you were talking about in the very beginning. Does it make you feel comforted? Is that why you're reaching for something? Like for me, it's coffee, which, you know, even though of course we're making decisions for our children, I want to talk about coffee and the caffeine aspect briefly, because even with my 4-year-old son, because I love coffee and I drink a little bit too much, he will always want to smell it and he'll be like, I can have this when I get older too, right, mama? And every time I'm like, oh, Lauren, get off of the caffeine, because he's already counting down to when he's older and he can drink coffee and he's sniffing it, right? Like he loves the smell of it.
Oh yeah. And that's all going into his brain as a preference. And, you know, I don't want to demonize coffee. Coffee's okay, but we're a caffeine obsessed country. The fact, you know, it's funny. I speak a lot to audiences and I like to say as health practitioners that many of us point fingers at our patients. Mm. And I say, when you do that, you have three pointing back at you, because none of us are as healthy as we want to be. So I say, just to sort of create some humility, everyone stand, and I do a working sort of living graph. And I say, I want you to sit down if you don't floss your teeth. Of course, everybody in you know, dental audiences, no one would sit.
Oh, yeah.
Demons, right? But and I say, sit down if you're not wearing your seatbelt. Sit down if you're not drinking, you know, 6 to 8 full glasses of water a day. Sit down and people will start to sit. Sit down if you're not exercising at least 5 times a week for 30 minutes. You know, like people sit. Then I'll say something like, I start to get to the point where I need to get this exercise over with. I just start rattling. As soon as I say, sit down if you're not waking up to a going to sleep at night with a drug or waking up to a drug every day. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of stop and I go, caffeine. And they're like, whoosh.
Yep.
Guess why? Because 93% of us as adults, by the time kids go off to college, 93% are using caffeine daily. Mm-hmm. And it is a drug.
Yeah.
It is a drug that messes with adenosine, our sleep hormone. So it interrupts our sleep. Mm-hmm. And it is a sign that we're underslept, and we are as a nation. We don't value sleep enough, so we wake up tired to alarm clocks. Mm-hmm. And then we have to drag our butt out of bed and get some drugs in there so we can pep up. But it's a drug. It's not an energy provider in the sense that it's a nutrient, right?
Right.
So it brings you up and drops you down, which means we're chasing this roller coaster through the day. I need a pick me up, right? And then we start to see this drug overused to a point where it loses its efficacy. So people can say, gosh, I can drink a cup of coffee before bed. No problem. That is deceiving, Lauren. It really does rob you of quality of sleep.
Well, and that's exactly what I was getting ready to point out before you brought it up, was that I don't even drink coffee for energy, even if I'm tired. I drink coffee just because it's a comfort thing that I wake up and I do. It doesn't help me anymore because I've drank so much coffee throughout my life. And it's that drug aspect. And as you were sitting there and talking, you were talking about like your exercise that you do with your speaking groups. I was thinking like, yeah, I mean, what if we knew that we were being watched every second of our day with every decision that we make in order to, I don't know, have an extra 10 years added to our life, right? We had to prove that we actually cared about our lives. How different would our decisions like that be each and every day?
I know, it's so true. I think about that because I asked my son, Hunter, who's this high-risk adventurer, you know, he's in that world, and he's very amazingly bright and has all of his certifications, but, you know, Mother Nature can sometimes have their way with these athletes. And so I said to him, my biggest fear, honey, is that I'm going to outlive you someday, which is a parent should never have to outlive their kid. And he said, well, Mom, get used to that idea, only I'll be like 84, like a normal person. You'll be 114. Because, you know, I love the smell and taste of coffee. I don't drink it because there's no nutrient value for me. So if I drink a half a cup of coffee to enjoy it with my friends on a vacation or something, trust me, I feel a half a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. It's a drug. Yeah. Again, loses its efficacy. So anyway, I don't make all of the, you know, I make decisions to, you know, I had French fries last night because I'm a French fry connoisseur and went to a really good place. But I didn't eat the whole basket of fries. Right. I ate them because it's nice to enjoy them sometimes, but it is a cheat, not a treat. And caffeine is a drug that should be respected as a drug. And now I think we're really seeing that these caffeine energy drinks are really a problem.
Yeah.
We see a lot more emergency department overdose and seizures from this in young adults, partly because they're also pumping it into alcoholic beverages. Mm. So when my nephew was in college, the college drink of choice was Red Bull, Jägermeister, and Viagra. Talk about a party waiting to happen, right? And because kids might be drinking excessively, doing shots, they're not keeping track of how much caffeine. Mm. So when a kid passes out and has a seizure, it can often be from the caffeine overdose, not the alcohol overdose. So we see, you know, this has been terrible, but I'm not a big proponent of shocking your system with that level of a stimulant, but I'm also not a big proponent of cocaine or, you know, Adderall or Ritalin or, you know, some of these drugs that are bombarding the system with an amphetamine or a, you know, an opioid that gives a shock, you know, or, you know, like cocaine gives a shock to the system. I don't think that's healthy. Mm-hmm. So I don't do that.
And I think it's so important. I mean, if we can really teach ourselves to start viewing it in the same light that it is to the extreme versus like this accepted, I mean, caffeine's just accepted, right, in our society. Like no one thinks of it like, oh, you're giving your child cocaine. They don't think of it like that. And how different would everything be? How much longer would our children live? How much, you know, less heart disease, everything else, if we did start viewing it like that. And again, taking responsibility is setting that example, starting with myself even, and then really viewing it in the life of our children.
Do they really need it? You know, if they're getting adequate sleep, they really don't. And, you know, I think that, again, that's just another way that we've stopped thinking. We've just done habitual, you know, following of people. But even if you look back with your grandparents, they might've had a Coca-Cola on an occasion. Mm-hmm. And it was a 6 ounce glass or bottle of Coca-Cola with some ice. You know, it was always a stimulant. Mm-hmm. But how it was that it made it into our, so that 73% of our 5 to 12-year-olds are drinking it every day. Mm-hmm. And by the time they go off to college, like 96 or 93%, I can't remember the statistic, it's in the book, but that's craziness, just craziness to me.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, if you have any questions about when it comes to your drinks, whether water, caffeine, chocolate milk, even, which is a great one. Be sure if you're watching this on Facebook or Instagram that you post your questions in the comments, and Dr. Susan Maples would be more than happy to help.
Yeah, I'd love to entertain questions. And I feel like now we've sort of said they're all bad. You know, none of us, including you and me, Lauren, are ever going to spend our whole lifetime just drinking water. Mm-hmm. So part of it is to look carefully at this chapter as, what are alternatives and what can we have on celebration days or when we go out to eat or, you know, those kind of things, or what can we do day to day that makes more sense for us?
Yes.
That's really the deal.
I mean, it all starts with the tiny changes, right? And then just continue making tiny changes. Don't just make tiny changes once and then be done. Keep making those tiny changes and it'll get better and better and better. All right, all. Thank you so much for joining us for our episode on drink today.
Can't wait for our next episode on Digest 2, which is going to be the one chapter I learned most about in doing the research for the book. That's been a big hotbed of interest for many people, is hear things like leaky gut and, you know, gut dysbiosis, and a lot of people are suffering silently from digestive ailments that weren't there 50 years ago. Why is that? And what can we do? So join us for that for sure. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Parent podcast with your host, Dr. Susan Maples, author of Brave Parent, and Lauren Eckert, founder of Burning Soul Press. Be sure to leave a podcast review and grab your copy of Brave Parent on Amazon or Audible or wherever you choose to buy your books. Bye for now.